Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. You can find us online at thenerdyrat.com. Today we're going to be talking about ways to introduce new rats to your group and the movie Logan, which we saw this weekend.
Welcome, everybody. This is episode one. It is March the 6th, 2017. If you didn't get a chance to listen to episode zero, we recorded a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of really good stuff on it, like general tips and stuff to consider before adopting a rat.
Yep, it's like an introduction episode if you've never owned rats before and you need to consider, you know, ways to do it and how to take care of them and things like that. That's a good introduction episode for that.
Yeah, I think we crammed a lot of really good info into the first 30 minutes of that episode.
Mm-hmm. And our future episodes are going to more focus on kind of things you can do when you're already a rat owner. They're not going to necessarily be quite as hands-on with the educational for new rat owners.
Yeah. So this week I was looking at Facebook. I was looking at some of the rat groups, and just I like to go through and look at questions that people ask. And one thing, a question I saw was tips for introducing a rat to one of your an existing mischief that you already have.
And mischief, by the way, is the official name for a group of rats. Because What do ratties do? They get up to mischief.
That's right. And I've had a lot of experience like introducing new rats to mostly girls, because I usually keep girls.
Mm-hmm.
With girls, I think it's a little bit easier. With boys, it's more difficult, because if they're not neutered as they get older, they can become aggressive. And they usually do become a little bit more aggressive as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
So introducing male rats that are over a year old that are unneutered, really, if you're going to introduce them, I would recommend getting them neutered first, because that'll make them a lot more docile. But
yeah, and the male rats, especially, they will get into fights and they can actually kill each other. And well, I mean, girls can do that too, but boys are going to be much more aggressive.
Yeah, and I had two boys that had been together their entire life, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they just out of the blue one day just started going after each other. And I had
because
to separate
they weren't
them.
Neutered.
Yeah, they weren't neutered. And I don't know. They had a disagreement.
Yeah.
So, and well, what happened there is we separated them, got them neutered, and then waited a couple of days. And when we reintroduced them, they were fine. They had no problems.
Yeah. So that's just another good reason to neuter your rats, neuter your males, and spay your females.
Yeah. Kind of, if you don't neuter males, if they've been together their whole life, it's
no guarantee.
Sometimes fine, but it's kind of always, there's always a possibility. You gotta be aware of that. So with girls, it's usually pretty easy, but every now and then you will have some that are more difficult than others. I was reminded a couple years ago, I had four rats at the time, and I decided I want to get a single rat if I told the coordinator for my rescue, if they came across a single rat, to let me know, because I'd want to see if I could adopt her. I don't know why. I just wanted to. And
increase your size of your group.
Exactly. And well, she told me about this girl at the Rockville what's
animal
it called?
Shelter.
Animal shelter. Yeah. And her name was Jessie, and I believe she was surrendered because she did not get along with other rats. And they said that on the paperwork. They also said she was jealous. For some reason, I don't know how a rat can be jealous, but
yeah.
But they said in the paperwork that I got for her that she did not get along with other rats, and I believe that's the reason she was given up. They also said they were moving too, but
where were the other rats? I mean, if they were moving, why didn't they give up
all
the rats?
That's what made me think that it was really a situation where they just didn't want to deal with this rat fighting with other rats. So I got her, and basically, this is kind of how I've always. This is the first time I had to do it, but what I did was I put them in the tub,
The bathtub.
Put them in the bathtub with nothing
No
else.
Water. No they, water. They dry bathtub.
Don't give them a bath.
But you probably want to plug the drain in case your ratties are small. You don't want them going down the drain. I'm serious about that.
Just like an empty tub. So basically it forces the rats to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. If you put like a towel or like a hidey place in there, they may just like hide and ignore each other. But if you put them in a tub by themselves, it'll force them to smell each other and like interact.
And you'll see if they're going to fight.
What I found was one of my rats, Mag, got into a fight with her because I didn't know this at the time, but Mag was basically the alpha of my group, and she decided that she was gonna dress down the new rat, and Jesse was also very dominant. She wanted to be the alpha too, so they would fight. And the first day they were fighting after being in the tub for a couple of minutes, as soon as they sized each other up. And so I had to separate them, and then we came back the next day. We did the exact same thing, and they got along a little bit better. But after 4 or 5 minutes, they were fighting again. Third day, back to the tub. This time it was going maybe 10 minutes or so. I think by the fourth day, what I did was I set up the play area. I have this this thing called a Great Wall. It's a product you can get online. It's a giant piece of plastic that's about like 2.5 foot tall, and it loops around on itself, so it forms this wall.
So you can make an enclosed play area like on the floor. So you can, you know, let your rats have some runaround time, but they're somewhat contained. But you do want to separate them when they're in there, because some of the rats can jump out.
Yeah,
if they're really good jumpers.
Yeah, the your more athletic rats can jump out of this thing, and you got to watch for that. But it's good because it kind of keeps them generally in one place.
And they get more area, and they need that stimulation and that mental break from their cage. So it's really good for them. You want to put toys in there, hiding places, wheels, all kinds of things like that. So they have somewhere to hide, somewhere to run.
Yeah. So on the fourth day, they were all playing in there, and they would still fight occasionally. And I just have to keep an eye on it and separate them if they got too rambunctious with each other. And we did that for another 4 days, I think. So
it's over a week.
Yeah. So this was the longest introduction I've done. It took a week, and it was slow, and it had to be really watchful because they would fight. And on the last day, when I finally decided we were going to put them together in the same cage, what I did was I got them out and I put them in their little play area, and then I cleaned the whole cage, scrubbed it down, emptied it out, and then I rearranged everything so stuff was in a different place.
And so by washing it, you know, he's eliminating the scent of the other rats. So that helps Jessie feel more acclimated, like she's not coming into somebody else's space necessarily.
It feels like they're coming into neutral territory.
Exactly.
To kind of live together. So.
Exactly.
And after that, they got along pretty well. Like there was some dominance fighting. If you're not familiar with that, what dominance fighting looks like in rats is they'll basically hunch their back legs up and kind of try and sit on the other rat a little bit.
Yeah. You know,
and then what they do is they'll sit on them and then they'll groom them. Yes. Usually the alpha will do that to the other ones.
To kind of show who's in charge.
But sometimes, so
sometimes some of the other rats will do it to each other too, because there is a pecking order. So it's not just like the alpha is going to be the only one doing it. Sometimes the other ones need to establish like who's second, who's third.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll hear squeaking from the rat being pinned down. And you know, you can generally ignore it, but if it seems to go on for too long, you may want to get in there and separate them.
Yeah. It's normal. And it's not reason to be concerned. And you don't always need to separate them the moment they start doing
it. Try to let them work it out for themselves
first. They're social animals, and they have a pecking order like people do. Mm-hmm. And you have to let them figure that out. And if you break them up every single time that they do that. Now, if one of them is squeaking, that's basically telling the other rat, you win.
Right.
Stop. And if the other rat is just like not, you know, if it goes on for an extended period of time, or it seems like the rat's really hurting the other rat, then it's time to separate them. But but overall, you want to kind of let them sort it out on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this brings up something important, which is that some people don't know that you have to introduce new animals to each other. For any like group of animal, like we're talking about rats, but you cannot just take a new rat and add it to a group of existing rats.
You would
introductions. That's asking for fights that are actually going to result in harm or death.
At bare minimum, you need to have one session where they meet on neutral territory to see how they're going to interact. Right. Now, when we got Athena was very docile. She was she was not an alpha.
And we didn't have a lot of alphas at the time. We had just lost several rats. So we had two older rats who were submissive. We had a new rat who we had just gotten, Nim, who was an alpha, but she's a gentle alpha.
She was a mom, so she's a very caring, she's not super aggressive and not she doesn't need to be dominant over everybody all the time. And I kind of had the feeling that they were going to get along, but we still put them in the tub
to double check
and make sure that they're not going to kill each other when you put them in. And then after sitting there for 10-15 minutes, we're like, okay, we're going to put her in there and see how she does. And she was fine. And a lot of times introductions will go that way, but you have to be cautious when doing that.
And if they do fight, like Matt was saying with Jesse and Meg, you can't put them in together on the same day, and it might take a week or more than a week. So you have to be patient, and you have to make sure you have an extra cage set up, you know, so you can work on the introduction slowly.
If you don't own a second cage and you want to introduce a new rat, I would reach out to your local. If there's a rat rescue, ask them if you can borrow a cage for a week. Because a lot of them. Like I know our rescue would do that for you. If you had an existing rat, you were looking at adopting a single rat, I would think you would only adopt a single rat into another group of rats, because you should not be keeping rats by themselves.
Oh, that's something important to talk about, is that rats have to, they're social animals. They have to have another rat with them. In fact, that's how we got Athena. She had come from another family of humans, and all her cage mates had died. And, she kept surviving and kept surviving, and she's an older girl. And they realized they had to get her socialized again with more rats, even though they loved her and, they would have preferred to keep her. They realized she really needed to be around other rats. And now she is thriving with us and our huge group of rats that we have right now.
Yep.
But I know several years ago, before I met Matt, I knew there was a group of middle school kids who was, one of my friend's daughters was in middle school, and she's like, oh yeah, they all have a pet rat, but they all had single rats. And it was I didn't know that was wrong back then. I didn't know you should have, you had to have at least a pair. And apparently no one at the pet store had informed them either, because it was the latest pet trend and everybody just had one rat.
Yeah, pet stores are especially bad about that particular part of owning rats. And I think a lot of them will say we recommend getting multiple, but they, and then if you ask them, it's like, it's okay if I just get one. They're like, oh yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but
it's
not.
It's not. It's it's just not.
Your animal's going to be really depressed, probably get unhealthy.
It's going to be hard enough if you have two and one passes what you can do. I understand not getting another rat at that point.
But then at that point, if you have two and one passes, you might need to be prepared to surrender it to a rescue.
If there is a rescue, I would definitely reach out to see if they can rehome it with another family of rats. Because I think, I really think Athena has been thriving since we got her.
She is so happy.
She's over 3 years old at this point.
Which is crazy. And I was saying to Matt just yesterday, I feel like she's just made her mind up that she's not going to die. She's just like, I love it here. I'm happy. Yeah. I got babies to be like my grandbabies. I got sisters. Yeah. She is just so happy all the time. And in fact, we know her human parents. We call them her parents. But we know her parents now because we've had them over to visit her and stuff like that. And they comment too on just how happy she is being with the other rats. They can see a huge difference in her.
I think just when people get old, mental health is so important to people.
Absolutely.
If your mental health isn't there, your body health isn't gonna be there
Exactly. So animals, their mental health is very important, no matter what kind of pet you have.
Yeah. Speaking of rescues, we have four boys still from our group. We had two adopted.
We had two adopted since our last episode. And, the boy who was especially hairless, who we were calling Snugglebug, he got adopted. So I'm happy for him. Their foster mom seemed great. Yeah, not their foster mom, their forever mom.
Well, the lady who was going to adopt.
Yeah.
And she's
owned rats before. She was very excited.
When she said, oh, I prefer to pick rats based on personality over what they look like, I was like, yes.
Yeah, yes. I know.
Oh, you are,
You're going to be a good rat owner. Yes.
Because I said that on the last podcast, too. You know.
Yeah, it's, you know, you want to pick based on their personality and who you connect with. And they're all so unique in terms of personality.
She really had a hard time picking because they were all so sweet to her.
So we still have four amazing boys.
Three of them are Rex, and one of them is regular fur.
Yep, and remember, the Rex fur is curly fur.
Yeah, Rex fur is
curly whiskers, which are so cute.
Yeah, and they love the bonding pouch that you made for them.
Yeah, and so I had found, actually Small Angels had posted several months ago a pattern for a bonding pouch, and that's like just like a little pocket you sew with a strap on it, and it goes around your neck, and then you can put the rats inside the pouch. And we're going to post that pattern on our website, but I will say that the pattern, I actually increased the size of the pattern from the one that was posted, and it's still too small. So I'm going to suggest that if you decide to make a bonding pouch, that you probably at least want to triple the size, if not quadruple the size, because I made it about twice as big, and it only holds two adult rats in a tight fit. And really, like, you want to have several rats in there snuggling at once because that's what they love to do. So I suggest really increasing the size for your bonding pouch.
Yeah, they always make stuff like that smaller, I think, than they should. Like the Liz got me this hoodie for Christmas that had a little pouch in it. And it was supposed to be for
a
cat, but
yeah, that it had like a little removable pouch in the front of it, so like, you could put like a cat or a dog. The website said a cat or a dog in there to like cuddle with it,
like maybe a chihuahua.
I don't even know a chihuahua would fit in there.
Kitten couldn't, like, I actually had Kitten kind of sitting in it.
Yeah, that's our cat. He's not actually a kitten anymore. That's just his name.
His butt barely fit in it.
Yeah, he's a big boy though.
But it's perfect for rats.
Yeah, it is perfect. And you know what? We can post the pattern for that on the website too. And actually, what I did to customize the one I made for Matt, I got some really awesome rat patches off of Etsy. There's this person who designs them herself, and she prints them and makes them herself. They're iron-on patches, and she is so specific with her rat designs. She's got the Dumbo ears, she's got the regular ears, she's got the agouti, she's got the hooded, she's got the pink-eyed whites. So oh my gosh, I cannot recommend her enough. We'll put a link for her Etsy store on the site too.
When I opened that jacket, I was like, where did you find a rat jacket?
I know. And
like,
I said,
who's making jackets for rats? Like,
because
it really looked like it was made for a rat. Because it even had like, it had ears, but I guess they were supposed to be cat ears.
Cat ears. Yeah, they had like little paws.
Little paws on it.
Mm-hmm, it's really cute. It
was made in like China or something?
Somewhere overseas, yeah. So, but I mean, the link, it ships from the U.S., but yeah, I mean, it was designed from somewhere overseas.
Did you get me like the extra large?
Or even the double XL, because they said on the website you had to order two sizes bigger because it ran really small.
Yeah, the size you got me was good for me. I normally wear like a large.
Yeah, so yeah, I think I would have gotten you the 2X then. Yeah, and it came out just perfectly size large for normal Americans.
It's great. I keep it in the basement, so whenever I'm down here, I want to play with the rats. They really like it.
Exactly. And the nice thing is you can zip the inside of the pouch out so you can wash the pouch if they pee in there or poop in there, and you just want to get it nice and clean, separate from the hoodie. So I think that's a really nice feature on it.
It's interesting that they thought of that, because like if it's for a cat, like you wouldn't, like the cat's not going to pee in it, but a rat would.
But you still might want to wash it out separate to get like all the hair out and like odor and dander and stuff out.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's a great jacket for rat owners. So
Really, our vet tech found that and recommended it to me. So she was, kudos to Nancy. She was the one who found that.
Yeah. Also, I want to mention, if you guys noticed the episode artwork, hopefully it'll appear when you're playing the podcast. But that's all artwork that I've been doing.
Yes, Matt has been doing lots of art, and actually he's going to put it up on deviantart.com as well, so you can see he's got so many of them right now. So
I'm not sure. I think I was going to post them as the episodes come out. That we
use you think
them
so?
For. I might post a couple if I'm not sure when I'm going to use
okay.
them.
Okay. Yeah.
Like I did a Captain Marvel rat.
Mm-hmm. Captain Marvel is one of my favorite characters, and I have to say, by the way, I'm so excited that they're making a Captain Marvel movie. I just hope it's good, because if it's not good, I'm going to be sad.
It's, you know, all the Disney Marvel movies have been really good.
They really have.
I think it'll be good.
I hope it'll be good. My concern is that they haven't done one with a female lead, and somehow people seem to lose their minds when they're writing for women and be like, oh my God, I have to make it completely shallow and I can't talk about anything real and I can't make her human. Now, Marvel doesn't seem to have had that problem. Like, I think they've done a good job with Black Widow, for instance. Yeah, however, I'm a little apprehensive.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous, I guess I should say. I just hope it comes out well.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully it'll be, I think it's next year, right?
Sometime. They hired Brie Larson to star as Captain Marvel. And I had to say, after the Oscars, I was really excited about Brie Larson because she presented an award to Casey Affleck, who was accused of sexual assault and sexual harassment. And she was phenomenal. She didn't hug him, and she deliberately kept her arms at her sides when everybody was clapping for him. And she's done that, I think, at multiple award shows this season. And I just applaud her so much for taking a stand and, you know, standing up against that and making a statement, but in a very professional way.
Yeah, she seems pretty cool.
I like her in the things I've seen her in.
Yeah, we'll see. Wonder Woman comes out soon, doesn't it?
Wonder Woman comes out this year.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I am excited for that too.
I think that looks really good.
I think so too. I'm hopeful about that.
So
are we going to transition into nerdy stuff since we're kind of...
So Bao Bao went back to China.
Oh, yes. Well, we could talk about that. Just in related animal news.
How do you feel about that?
I feel crushed. I feel sad inside. I'm dead inside. No, Bao Bao, in case you don't, like, what are you all talking about? Bao Bao was a panda cub at the National Zoo, which we live close to. She was actually the second cub born there in recent years, but I loved her. I used to watch her on the panda cam. All the time. I took screenshots of her from the panda cam.
Well, Bao Bao is kind of what started the panda fever for you, right?
It is. Yeah, she is. Because I wasn't really aware of the first cub. I wasn't paying attention like to the news and all that. And I think Bao Bao may have been the first one that they got the panda cams for. Although I'm not sure about that. But they got the panda cams. Oh, on the app. You know what? I think Bao Bao was the first one where the panda cams were on the app. Because before that, you couldn't watch the cams on your iPhone. And when do I ever sit at my computer? So I was never able to watch the panda cams, but then you could watch them whenever you wanted if you got the National Zoo app, and I would watch it all the time. Yeah. And I would take screenshots of my favorite little Bao Bao pictures because she was so cute and precious. And Matt, why don't you tell them about what happened when you were transferring stuff from a computer for me?
Well, I was trying to, I was going to fix your computer because it came with Windows 8. And Windows 8 did not work.
No.
And so I was going to put 7 on. So I was like, what stuff do you need backed up off of this computer? And she's like, oh, my pictures. So I go in and it's like, you need all 100 of these screenshots of the panda cam. She's like, yes, I need all of them in there.
All of them.
All precious to me.
Yes, they are. Because each one was such a different little pose. And she was so cute in a different little way. In fact, we should post on the website, babe. I used to make sketches of Bao Bao from the screenshots. Oh. I'll post some of them online. They were so hilarious.
It's like what I do.
I know, but I do it with Bao Bao. Yeah. So anyway, yes, I needed every single one of those. And I am so sad she's gone to China. Now she's going to a reserve and she's going to be part of their breeding program. So, I mean, all of that's great, but I just loved her so much. I'm sad to see her go.
That's part of the deal they have when they give them when China gives zoos the adult pandas, right?
Yes, because they get the rights to the cubs. And it's a good thing because they're doing really excellent conservation work in China. And it's worldwide because they have to keep the genetic pattern diverse. So it's really they're leading the worldwide conservation movement and increasing pandas because you were saying, babe, they got upgraded their status in the wild.
I believe they went up from endangered to vulnerable.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, China says that's not necessarily the most accurate portrayal of their status because they said the problem is their habitat is gone.
Yeah.
So even though their numbers have gone up enough to put them at vulnerable status, it's the numbers have mostly gone up in captivity and on the reserves. So it's not necessarily like they're going to be less vulnerable in the wild.
Yeah, so in the near future, you'll just have a bunch of pandas in zoos. Or
But then people get to play with them and see them all day, and I'm not really sad about
that. Yeah, I still need to find that. I need to show you that video of the panda that we kept trying to crawl up the leg of the keeper. The keeper was like trying to clean the pen, and the baby panda kept walking up to him and crawling up his leg, and then he'd pick him up and take him over and set him down, and then he'd go back to, and then the panda would just crawl back over to him.
See, that's why I love panda bears. They're so precious. They're like little teddy bears.
Yep.
Who could bite your hand off probably and break it, because they have they're not carnivores. They eat bamboo, but they have very strong teeth because they have to break that bamboo.
Because they eat bamboo. And
it's tough.
Have you ever tried to clear out bamboo somewhere?
Not personally, but our neighbors, and a lot in our neighborhood, there's a lot of invasive bamboo. And oh my gosh, trying to get rid of it is terrible.
Oh yeah, it's so hard to get rid of. That's why I think we should just release a bunch of pandas.
That's a great idea. we'll reintroduce pandas into our neighborhood. Like, take care of that bamboo for us, panda bears.
Why is this not a thing?
Exactly. It should be. Well, you know they can rent goats out to chew lawns up.
Rent out some pandas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We should. We should pioneer that.
Yeah. I feel like the pet panda industry would be real big.
Maybe.
But. Probably terrible too.
Yeah. Well, yes. Exotic pet industry tends to be horrible. Yeah. Yes.
All right. So we saw Logan this weekend.
Yes. And we're going to give spoilers. So if you don't want spoilers, pause the podcast right here and we'll put a little note on the notes for where you can either fast forward to or just go watch Logan and then come back and listen to the rest of the podcast.
It's been out for 3 days.
You need to see Logan.
It's been out for 3 days. You should have seen it already. If you're listening to this podcast, I hope you would have seen it already, because it's probably one of the best comic book movies this year. Well, this year's been 3 months long, but... It's the best comic book movie I've seen since Deadpool, really.
And honestly, I think it's one of the best out of the entire X-Men franchise, because it's so different in mood and style.
Yeah, it really is, because...
It's not like this poppy, action-y, feel-good flick. It's actually based on a Western kind of movie with the feeling and the heart.
It's gritty and violent.
But it's got heart, and it's got meaning, and it's got honor and friendship tied in with that, which is kind of what makes it like a spaghetti Western, you know?
Well, the whole scene where they're having dinner with the family.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really, really sweet kind of... And then everybody dies.
Exactly. And that's kind of the thing. It's like it wrenches your heart out, because it has these really powerful moments. And for example, Logan is caring for Charles Xavier, who's got Alzheimer's. And, just the interactions between the two of them, showing the absolute frustration that Logan feels trying to take care of this old man who's got these incredible mental powers that get out of control. And the frustration and the hatred almost that he has for the tasks, but the deep, deep love he still feels for Charles. Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, and the one villain guy at one point is how scary is that the most powerful mind in the world has a degenerative brain disease? That's crazy. That really is scary. And that was one of the few elements that they actually took from Old Man Logan
the comics, Old Man Logan.
From the comic book version.
Which is quite different. The comics plot of Old Man Logan is very different, but they did pull a couple things from it.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with comics, you kind of really, this is kind of an amalgam of Old Man Logan, the death of Wolverine, and then a kind of X-23 origin story, too. Mm-hmm. And, I want to say, this really feels like this is what you can really do with a movie when you're not trying to set up a franchise or a series or, a sequel.
A sequel, yeah.
Because there's no JAG or after-credit scene at the end of the movie.
Right. Now, it's possible that they could do more stories with the child characters, but they don't have to, and that wasn't really the point of the movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, there wasn't, a 10-minute montage of, all the superheroes that weren't in the movie, in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's
here's the little preview for their movies, you know? Yeah.
But it's so good. It was. I do want to see it again, but I feel like I need some time before it.
It's a heavy movie. It's really sad. It's powerful, and the sadness isn't for nothing. The sadness is meaningful.
Yeah.
But it's hard. I think it deals with real life issues, because it's. I mean, even though it's Charles Xavier, caring for a parent who has Alzheimer's, you know, that's difficult. Oh my goodness. And that's,
I kept thinking about my grandfather. Yeah. In those scenes. And because like he definitely had moments where he was like
lucid,
fully aware of what was going on. And like when he was talking about X23 and he was like, oh, she's, you know, the female of the species has the, cause talking about her claws that she has in her foot.
Yeah. She has claws in her hands and in her feet, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was talking about it.
Yeah, and like kind of the relationship between him and X-23 I thought was really good too.
It was really good. And even his relationship with Logan, I mean, he had his lucid moments with Logan and he still had his insights into Logan's character and could give him like try to pass the values on that were important in life.
Yeah. And man, like there's a lot of moments in there where like stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody would die and I'd be like, oh my God, I did not expect that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, oh, this must be a dream sequence. I'm like, no, this is really happening.
Yeah.
Because they've done that in other X-Men movies where like something shocking happens.
Right.
You go, oh, it's just a stupid dream sequence.
Right.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
But this was just all.
Yeah.
And
so,
the action scenes were so good.
Oh, they were. They were well filmed. They were really well done. And I will say it was a very violent movie, but I don't feel that it was actually as gory as it could have been. Now, take that with a grain of salt, because you do see like people's heads getting ripped off and split in half and things like that. But there wasn't a lot of blood. It wasn't like a very realistic blood where they're focusing on the blood and gore.
There wasn't a ton of gore in it. So I think it got the R rating because Deadpool.
Well, it's violent.
I think they said, okay, you can do an R-rated movie after Deadpool was so successful.
Yeah.
Do you think it needed an R-rating?
I do. Because I think with the heads getting cut off and the heads being split in half. And also, just it was really violent in terms of like when they're stabbing, like when Wolverine and X-23 are stabbing people.
Yeah, that's true. Just the fact
that
it's
a little
Wolverine,
kid stabbing. Like, it's a little kid stabbing people too a lot. Like.
Yeah, like if you're going to make a Wolverine movie, like he has claws for hands that can cut through anything. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, because like a lot of the other ones that were PG-13 didn't have as much of an edge to any of the action.
That's the thing. They didn't have an edge even to the tone. I mean, I feel like if it had been PG-13, now I know there's going to be a lot of idiot parents out there who still take their kids to see this, but please don't do that. Please do not do that.
If you're not aware,
for kids.
Yeah,
it's not for
it's
kids.
It's not for little kids.
And I think if it had gotten the PG-13 rating, a lot more kids would have been taken to see it. Thinking it's going to be like a little pop movie, kind of like the other ones, you know, like
I'm not sure they would have really enjoyed or appreciated it.
No,
as much.
It's just not appropriate for kids. It's too heavy.
It's too heavy.
It's too dark. Kids don't need to be seeing stuff like that.
Yeah,
but adults, yes,
that's
go love it.
Thank you. What'd you think of the Deadpool trailer?
Oh, I loved it. Oh my gosh, that was so hilarious. I did not expect to see a Deadpool trailer at the beginning of the movie.
I thought the movie was starting, and I was like, and then he goes, he's like, not on my watch, mother effer. I'm like, oh no, it's Deadpool.
It was Deadpool.
And then and the homage to Superman, I just died.
Oh,
When we start playing the Superman music, I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
And did you see, I don't know if you noticed, but all of that was taking place in front of a movie where Logan was playing.
It's like he was going to see Logan.
Yeah, it's like he was going to see the movie.
Yeah, there. I saw Ryan Reynolds was on Twitter and he was responding to something. Hugh Jackman had posted a picture of him with some fans in Australia or something.
And
Ryan Reynolds retweeted it and said those aren't fans, those are protesters.
Yeah, I love it. Deadpool's great, and I love his little ongoing rivalry with Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's just
and
hilarious.
With Hugh Jackman,
and with Hugh Jackman, both of them.
Carries
yeah,
into real life.
Yeah, well, playfully, but yeah, I think it's funny.
No, yeah, I'm excited for the new Deadpool movie, and I appreciate that it's not just a. It was actually like a little vignette that they did to promote the movie instead of like just showing you clips from the movie. I wish all trailers would do that.
I know, it would be so much better.
Even like Wolverine, like they didn't show much in the Wolverine trailers, but I feel like they showed so much. It's like there was no surprises. Like
that's why I try not to watch trailers.
We knew X-23 was going to be in it. We knew all the stuff about it going in.
Yeah,
and I gotta say they really got the character X-23 correct. Like everything.
And she's a kid. Like, so if you don't know, which you should, because we said watch the movie first before listening to this. But so she's a kid who's who they stole Logan's DNA and they created a kid who's genetically his daughter. And so she's played by like maybe like a little 10-year-old. And she was ferocious.
Was she 10?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, she was definitely.
She was tiny. She was like a tiny tot.
She was. Yeah, probably 10. I would say between 10 and 12.
I'm going to say 10 because she looked like a little kid, and kids go through puberty early these days. Yeah, so I'm thinking she's probably like 10. But
she was great, though. I liked it. Like,
she
didn't
fantastic.
Even talk for like the first half of the movie to the point where another character in the movie is like, how long's your kid been mute?
And I know.
And then like a few scenes later, she's talking and Wolverine's like, you can talk?
Yeah.
And then she just starts yelling at him. It's great.
Yeah. But she was perfect. Like she just, her eyes, the way she'd like glare at people. And
Yeah,
she was fantastic. She did a great job.
She did a great job for a job where half the movie she wasn't saying anything. And
yeah.
I feel like that's kind of difficult for actors sometimes to
absolutely
emote when they're not they're not talking. I mean I can imagine. I've never been an actor, but
I can imagine too. And I think I think she just was perfectly cast and she did a fantastic job.
I would like to see an X-23 movie. I think that would be cool.
I think it would be cool too if they did it well. If they did it well.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my caveat.
Yeah. Did you read much of the all new Wolverine?
No, actually, I haven't read any of it yet.
Did you read? I read the first one. I liked it.
Did you?
I thought, as a character, I thought she was really good.
Okay.
And she had these scenes where she was kind of like hallucinating. Like she was shot in the head and she like hallucinated talking to Wolverine.
Oh.
Wolverine was kind of like her mentor/father.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
In the comic books, Wolverine is dead.
Yeah.
And he's been dead for a while now, and they have not brought him back. And it's been like two or three years now.
Yeah.
Which is, that's like the new thing that Marvel's doing with the comic books. Just kill it. Kill everybody off. Everyone's dead. And then they don't bring him back, which they used to just bring him back all the time. Like it's the Arrow or something.
The Arrow TV show. Don't get us started. We talked a little bit last week on how we don't like the Arrow.
I've been watching more of it, and I kind of understand why people like it. It's basically a superhero soap opera.
And I will say we watched an episode together from the second season just recently, just because there was nothing else on that we wanted to watch. But I will say it seems like the writing in the second season gets better. I thought the first season was just painful, but it did seem like the writing got better in the second
season. I've just really
so.
Been watching it while I'm drawing or playing a game or something, and it's nice to have on in the background, but it's not like compelling television.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, and it's not really any comic book characters that I care that much about, so hard to get excited.
Mm-hmm.
But, so they announced a cast for the Inhumans TV show.
Yeah, and one of the actors is the guy I liked from The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
Ken Leung. I don't know how to say his last name.
Oh, is that the one that's playing Karnak?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah,
he was great in The Force Awakens, so I'm excited about
him. I read some of the new Karnak comics when he came back.
Oh, yeah?
I like that character. I like the idea. Like the whole idea of his powers is that he sees the weakness in things. So, like...
That's cool.
Like, he'll...
So he's good at like making sure plans are airtight and stuff like that.
Like in the first comic book, I saw like somebody fired a bullet at him and he saw like a weakness in the bullet and like touched it and it just shattered.
Oh,
or
that's
like,
interesting.
Or if somebody's coming at him, like he sees like presses him on the shoulder and he's got like a weakness in his shoulder and the guy like collapses in pain.
Interesting.
Really kind of cool. Like kind of a Zen monk kind of like
not unlike he was in The Force Awakens then. Yeah.
Wait, what character was he?
He was the blind one with the staff. The Force will protect me. He'd go and fight it. The Force is with me and I am with the Force.
That's who he is. I didn't know that.
That's why I'm excited about him. I loved him in The Force Awakens.
Well, I'm excited about I'm more excited for Lockjaw than anyone else in that movie.
Well, I hope Lockjaw is going to be all right, because, you know, sometimes CGI can be a little iffy.
Well, I hope they just get a really big dog and do like perspective to make him look bigger. And
I don't know.
A little moon on his head. That'll be great.
I suspect it's
I don't know. I love Lockjaw. I always like
Lockjaw in the comics. He's in the new Ms. Marvel comics.
If you're not aware, Lockjaw is a giant. What kind of dog is he? He's like a mastiff.
Bulldog?
Like a, he's
mastiff?
Like a giant mastiff slash bulldog.
I think he's a bulldog.
That teleports the. Well, sorry, I didn't mean to hit my mic there, but he teleports the Inhumans around. Basically, it's basically like their pet. He was in the Pet Avengers.
Oh, I didn't know they had a Pet Avengers.
Well, it was a comic book, like a, uh-huh. like I think like a one off, like the.
Oh,
like
okay.
The, it was like all the different. I think like. Like Tippy Toe was in it, and some of the other
pets.
Cute.
So
that, yeah,
that's very cute.
Yeah, but no, I'm excited for it.
Now is that going to be a Netflix show? What is that going to be, or is it going to be on network TV?
They said it was going to be an ABC show. Like,
is that what Flash is? Or
no,
Flash
it's just,
is WB, isn't it?
Yeah,
CW.
CW.
Oh,
but it's going to be the same that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is.
Oh, okay. Well, so hopefully that'll be. Oh, that makes sense because, of course, they're having all the Inhuman storylines in
but
Agents
it's
of
not,
S.H.I.E.L.D.
But it's not going to be produced by Whedon, I don't think. I think it's going to be a new team. But I'm excited. The characters are pretty cool. The Inhumans have been around for a long time, so... It'll be nice to see some of the actual, like the well-known Inhuman characters portrayed.
Like Medusa with her
hair.
Yeah,
because they've been doing Inhumans on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. forever, and it's like... There's like a whole bunch of heroes you've never heard of or they created.
Right.
Like,
right. So, you know, that'll be interesting, too, to see how they're able to tie that in. Because I imagine they're going to put it in the same universe as S.H.I.E.L.D. so they can have crossovers and things.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to
so
see
heavy.
How they can tie the story in because they don't have any Inhuman kings and queens and anything like that yet
in
S.H.I.E.L.D.
I imagine it's going to be a story about the Inhuman city or something, and like because it's like all the royalty of the Inhumans.
Yeah.
None of these characters have been in anything before, so
right.
I think it might be kind of more standalone-ish than like direct tie-ins.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll see. I guess we'll keep watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been pretty good this season.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I kind of like the direction they're going with. I really like the Ghost Rider. I hope we see more.
Oh, I
hope
he's coming back. Yeah. I was hopeful that he was. I'm crossing my fingers that he's going to come back later in the season because I felt like his story really wasn't over. You know.
Yeah, it'd be nice to give him his own series or something. I'd like to know more about the Ghost Rider that came before him because. It looked like the classic Ghost Rider.
Yes,
when you saw
it was supposed to be.
And I was like, oh, man, I would. Or maybe they're just going to say like the Nick Cage Ghost Rider is canon.
Yeah, something like that.
But I don't know. I liked the Ghost Rider movies, the Nick Cage ones, because Nick Cage is just ridiculous.
He's and ridiculous, but I didn't
see
the Ghost Rider
movies were crazy.
Yet.
They were by I know the second one at least was by the team that did Crank, which is another crazy kind of action. Nonstop. I really enjoyed the second. I think I like the second one a little bit more than the first one. But they're all kind of schlocky. But I like them.
Yeah.
So Capaldi, Capaldi has announced that he will be stepping down.
Bitterness in my soul.
And will be
as
regenerating
the doctor for Doctor Who
next year's
Doctor Who
next year's Christmas special or this year's Christmas special, I guess.
Yeah, they'll do it this year in the Christmas special. The bitterness in my soul because Capaldi has not had any good writing. He's done amazing things with his character as the Doctor, and I think that's been a little bit more of his own influence in there. Like, I love him as the Doctor, but the storylines and the seasons, I feel like he almost hasn't gotten a chance to act at all. Like, I can't even believe...
I don't know what is, like, you go back and you look at, like, Stephen Moffat's history with Doctor Who. Like, some of his first work on Doctor Who is some of the best episodes from season one.
Oh, yeah,
like
he did the gas mask kid, Are You My Mummy?
Are You My Mummy? I forget the name of those episodes, but he wrote both of them. The one, he created Jack Harkness.
He created
Jack, that character.
He created River Song.
He created River Song. Like,
all of that. Like,
so great.
And you know what? The three seasons that he wrote with Matt Smith were incredible. Like, they had lengthy stories. Like, it was clear that there was, like, an arc that went throughout the whole season. And that even went from season to season. And then it was like he was just completely out of ideas.
I feel
and,
like the last Matt Smith season, they were kind of starting to lose it a little bit.
Well, that's probably where his decline started.
I did not like that season as much as the previous two seasons.
It wasn't
I
as
felt
tight.
Like it didn't have as good of an overarching story.
It didn't.
And then Capaldi's first season was just plagued with a bunch of badly written episodes. Like,
terrible.
The moon is an egg. Like,
oh my god,
that's
even
it.
Get me started.
That's your whole.
I know, and I will say I like season two better with Capaldi, but I mostly like Capaldi being the doctor. I don't like the stories. I felt like there was so much more they could have done and they didn't do.
What stories did they do in his second season?
I can't even remember. Well, like, I thought that I was pleased with the first episode that had Davros, and I was like, oh, this is going to be like a theme for the whole season. They let it go. And even Missy ran off with the Daleks at the end of that episode, and I'm like, oh, she's going to come back. This is going to be like a whole season-long thing. They did nothing with that for the rest of the season.
I can't remember the rest of that season. Like, was it many episodes?
Really? No, it was the same number of episodes, but it was just completely forgettable. They had that girl. No, that was the first one, but they had that one, that girl who was like me or whatever her name was. That was a complete waste of time. That was like a completely unnecessary character. Because they tried to make it be this heavy, deep thing, and she was like nothing. Like, it, because they didn't do anything that had her impact Capaldi or the storyline in any way.
Yeah.
And Clara had no story and no arc, so she just became this shallow character.
The whole thing when she died, and then
it was so meaningless.
And then he went back in time. Yeah, and
it was just like so. Oh, yeah,
and they left the whole thing was how did they have an ancestor if Pinker?
Because in the previous season, they had that episode where she's in the future and she meets her kid that she has with Danny Pink. And then
it's not even her kid. It's like her grandkid or something.
Yeah. It's like her descendant. Her descendant.
And he looks exactly like Jesse. Danny. Yeah. Danny Pink. And it's like,
they never explained a huge plot hole. Never explained that.
She never has a baby. So.
And if we're going to talk about plot holes, I have to say that stupid episode with River Song, the Christmas one, it killed me. First of all, I felt like they totally assassinated her character because she adores the doctor. Like, that was her whole thing as a character, was that she loves him so much. And I found it completely unbelievable that she would be like hating on him and picking on him and cheating on him like the whole time, just like despising him basically, like when she's not with him. So I found that unbelievable. But the biggest plot hole I found was that when he first met her, he knew what their final meeting was because it was, he took her to that place and he gave her the sonic screwdriver. Well, Matt Smith thought he was out of regenerations. So he would have had to do that in order to preserve the timeline. As Matt Smith, he would have had to do that on that regeneration, or else, none of that stuff with River Song could have happened.
Well, I wonder sometimes if the writers have watched all the episodes.
All written by Stephen Moffat. Yeah. So I'm like, Stephen Moffat, read your own stuff. You're messing up your own stories.
It's funny. Somebody asked Joss Whedon one time if he would write for Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
And he was like, no, because
he's not British, though, is he?
He's like, his main reason for not wanting to do it was the fact that he had not watched all of it. So he was like, I've got 50 years of back history to go through before I can write for this thing.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Because he's the kind of person that will do that. Like, he's not.
Yeah, and you should. Like, that's why I've been trying to watch the old episodes, which Matt can't even sit through them with me because I'm starting with Doctor One. They are slow and they are boring and it's hard to get through them. But I love it, though, because it's the history and I want to see the whole evolution.
Well, we went to go see the one where the Doctor regenerated for the first time. That was restored.
They did a Fathom event. So they reanimated it because they lost the footage.
The whole 2.5 hour serial all at once.
It was bad. It was hard to watch the whole thing all at once.
It was awesome. I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
I kind of liked it in that format a little bit more because it forced you to watch it. And I really liked the second Doctor a lot.
I did too. I liked him and I thought the story was good and I really enjoyed seeing it. But it was hard to sit through. Like, I can usually only watch two of those episodes at once because in the old shows, everyone is like a 6-episode serial of like 30 minutes each. And the action is very slow in each one. Yeah. So I can't do more than 2 in a row usually.
Like, these were like early 60s episodes. Mm-hmm. So like the effects just weren't there. And pacing back then was much slower. I mean, it was slower in America if you watch films from the time.
Right.
Pacing was much slower. And it was even more so in Britain, I think.
Right. Right.
Because they're like a little bit behind as far as filmmaking.
Well, but also too, I felt like some of it is kind of like that Shakespearean influence of acting where it's like richer and more dramatic and slower. Yeah. Like in the episode I'm on with the First Doctor, I just finished one where the characters looked like bumblebees, like giant bumblebees.
Oh my
but
God.
Do you remember that one? But they took their roles so seriously. Like they were so in character and like they were acting with such passion and drama. And like
those were some serious freaking bees.
Yes,
like they were like I'm Buzz Lord from. it's like man, you're really playing this one straight, huh?
I know, it was fantastic. Like just to see that level of drama that they put into the role and how seriously they took that role.
That's honestly some of my favorite parts of science fiction from that time.
Yes,
like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, me too.
These people took this stuff so seriously.
Yeah, like they were like you said, they were playing it completely straight. They weren't.
Did you watch Robin Crusoe on Mars with me?
Or did yes, I watch we that watched. Oh, you made goodness. Me watch that with you. That was hard
it was
to watch.
So great. It was so great. Oh man, it was so.
Bring some coffee if you're gonna watch that one.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh. It was not. It was
it's
great.
Not very scientific, but
and it was pretty racist too. But
this is the '50s. That's the way it was.
That doesn't mean it's okay.
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying.
Uh-huh.
But, that's why I like. You ever see what's the one with Rob the robot? The one with Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen that one.
I have it somewhere. We'll have to watch it one night. It's
that's the one somebody cosplayed as at Comic-Con one year, right?
Yeah, they went as Rob the robot and the one from Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Too. Let me see, Rob. It was a great movie. I really.
But anyway, while he's looking that up, so you know the new season of Doctor Who is starting what in March or April? April? Was it April it's starting? But anyway, so it's going to be Capaldi's last season. I am not expecting much because it's still written by Stephen Moffat, the whole thing. And
well, it's not just...
Well, he's showrunner.
He's fine as a writer. It's,
no,
when he's a
not,
showrunner,
anymore.
Wow, yeah.
Not anymore. Because none of his episodes
it
are any
It
kind
of feels like he's just stuck recycling some of the old ideas over and over again.
Well, and you know what? I think that's the thing. I think as a writer for anything... Especially when it's like a series or something, you have to have enough humility to know when you're out of ideas and to pass the torch. And if you don't do that, you're destroying the thing that you once loved and helped create.
It was a Forbidden Planet. Was
Forbidden
the movie.
Planet. All right. So I haven't watched that.
We'll have to watch it one night. I've got it on DVD.
All right. Like, sometime when I'm when I've got like some knitting to do at the same time to help pass the time.
It's funny because it's Leslie Nielsen before he was a comedian.
Oh my goodness, that's gonna be odd.
So he's like the super serious.
So
like,
he's playing it straight.
He's like the main character. Yeah.
Oh.
It's pretty good. I enjoyed it.
In an MST3K kind of way. Yeah.
You have to be in the right mood
exactly.
to watch that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's very dated.
And you have to, I think like with the old Doctor Who's, like I have to be in the mood to appreciate that kind, to like laugh at the silliness of just like it being what it is, you know? Well,
this is also like Forbidden Planet's one of those movies where the theremin was like the only instrument they used for
the
entire soundtrack.
Oh, I love the theremin. Oh man, yeah, that's so awesome.
The whole soundtrack is just
now.
Just
if you don't
theremin.
Know what a theremin is, it's like a buzzing vibration kind of sound instrument.
Yep,
and it's used in a lot of like old sci-fi, old Ed Wood movies.
It's classic sci-fi.
Oh yeah, it just vibrates sound. And it almost sounds like a voice, and it just makes like that spooky vibrating sound.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. It's great.
It's like classic sci-fi and '60s horror.
Yeah.
Soundtrack.
And when you're in the mood for that kind of thing, it can be really fun.
Yeah, that's another reason the movie's so great too.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, sometime we'll have to watch it, and then when we do, I'm warning you all, it might be 6 months from now, then we'll do a little podcast about that too.
Oh, yeah.
We'll throw that into our nerdy section so I can tell you all what I thought.
Yeah, we'll have to come back. We'll do like a classic nerd section or something.
Something in one of the future episodes, but I'm warning y'all, it may not be anytime soon because I don't know when I'm going to be made to watch something like that.
We'll see. So
yeah, you want to start?
I think In a couple weeks when we do our next episode.
Yeah.
This weekend, Kong, the new King Kong movie comes out.
Oh, this weekend?
It's coming out next weekend, so it'll be the episode we record the week after that. It'll be about King Kong.
Yeah, all right.
Hopefully, if we have time, I want to watch the original 1933.
Oh, I've seen that before, and I love it. Yeah. Let me tell y'all, if they had had an R rating back then, it should have gotten it, because that claymation fighting between dinosaurs and stuff, it was bloody and gory and really violent.
It was bloody.
You haven't seen it with the claymation. Yeah, it was ferocious. Like, it was like those monsters did not play. Like, talk about playing something straight and taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Oh, I saw
it's violent.
I saw a retro review on that movie, and it made me want to see it.
I love it. I think it is so well done.
I'm excited about the new movie because it looks really good.
I actually haven't seen any trailers or whatever for it.
Maybe you shouldn't,
so.
because
I don't like spoilers.
Surprised.
I know. I don't like seeing trailers.
I think it's got a... I don't remember, but it's got some good actors in it. So.
But anyway, for our next episode, well, that'll be the nerdy section as our talking about King Kong. So watch, that's your homework assignment, listeners. Watch King Kong first so you don't get spoilers.
And we'll be doing it the week after the movie comes out, too. So you'll have plenty of time to go see it.
That's right.
I'm excited about that one. So. Mm-hmm. Anyways, do you have anything else you want to say before we
I think that's about it for today's podcast.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you want to support The Nerdy Rat, please consider donating to one of our charities. You can find the links on our website, thenerdyrat.com. On the right-hand side, our charities are Extra Life and Small Angels Rescue, serving the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area.
Yep.
Small Angels Rescue is a Frederick County MD-based 501 nonprofit, no-kill, all-volunteer organization dedicated to rescuing and rehoming gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, and rats.
Mm-hmm. And Extra Life supports the Children's Miracle Network, which is at children's hospitals around the country. We support our local one in D.C., and it's a fund for patients who can't afford care. So it directly goes to patients who need help with their medical bills.
Yeah.
And Matt does that.
You can sign up at the Extra Life site, and you can... you can stream for 24 hours and drink a lot of coffee and raise money for your local.
Or if you're not up for that, you can just donate to Matt's page.
Yeah. get all your family members to donate. That's great.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.